Senate will come to order. Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Roll call for Friday, February 12th. Anderson.
Here.
Bebout.
Here.
Burns.
Here.
Case.
Here.
Coe.
Here.
Cooper.
Here.
Dockstader.
Here.
Elliott.
Here.
Esquibel.
Here.
Geis.
Here.
Hastert.
Here.
Honeycutt.
Here.
Jennings.
Here.
Johnson.
Here.
Landon.
Here.
Larson.
Here.
Martin.
Here.
Massey.
Here.
Meyer.
Here.
Meyer-S.
Here.
Nicholas.
Excused.
Excused. Perkins.
Here.
Peterson.
Here.
Ross. Schiffer, Scott, Sessions, Townsend, Bonflatern, President Hines.
Here.
29 present, 1 excused.
Prayer of Father Crunkleton. Join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Reading clerk will please read the Journal Committee report.
Mr. President, your Journal Committee reports that the Journal of February the 11th, 2010, has been read and recommends that it be approved. Senator Dockstader, Chairman.
Are there any objections? There being none, the report is adopted. Doctor of the Day is Mark Ruzel, M.D. from Powell. And the nurse for the day is Jean Kennedy, Ivinson Memorial Hospital. Thought for the day, the difference between the impossible and the possible lies in a person's determination. Report from standing committees.
February the 11th, 2010, Mr. President, your committee number 7, Corporation Elections Political Subdivisions, to whom was referred Senate File 18, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Case, Cooper, Hastert, Johnson, and Scott, Senator Case, Chairman. February the 12th, 2010, Mr. President, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom was referred Senate File 24, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Hastert, Honeycutt, Landon, Schiffer, and Scott, Senator Scott, Chairman. February the 12th, 2010, Mr. President, your committee number 5, Agricultural, State and Public Lands and Water Resources, to whom was referred Senate File 36, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. I, Senators Bebout, Elliott, Geis, Jennings, and Johnson, Senator Geis, Chairman. February the 12th, 2010, Mr. President, your committee number 5, Agricultural, State and Public Lands and Water Resources, to whom was referred Senate File 37, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. I, Senators Bebout, Elliott, Geis, Jennings, and Johnson, Senator Geis, Chairman. February the 12th, 2010, Mr. President, your committee number 1, Judiciary, to whom was referred Senate File 8, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. I, Senators Burns, S. Myers, Perkins, Ross, and Sessions, Senator Ross, Chairman.
Senator Geis.
Mr. President.
Senator Geis.
Was Senate File 36 read in? Mr. President, File 36 is the Gillette well field bill, and I'd like to refer that to Committee Number 2.
Senate File 36 will be referred to Committee Number 2 without objection. Senator Scott.
Mr. President, was Senate File 61 read in? Turned into the front desk.
No, it hasn't been read in. It has not been read in yet. Members of the Senate, today is Art Advocacy Day, sponsored by the Wyoming Art Alliance. The Alliance is a nonprofit network of artists whose purpose is the development of art, quality art programming and art education. Today's event is being held to coincide with the Governor's Art Awards this evening in Cheyenne. We are joined by Green River resident Brian Ragsdale to help celebrate today's event. Brian is a singer, songwriter, and has written many songs about life in Wyoming. Much of his music focuses on the things he is proud of, including Wyoming's great outdoors, as well as being a father, husband, and veteran. Please help me welcome Brian Ragsdale. Brian?
Well, thank you very much, Mr. President, and the rest of you guys, senators, for having me. You know, I've struggled with what song I was going to play, and I figure you guys have a hard enough job, so I'll play a happy, uplifting song. But I'm here today to have lunch with all of you, hopefully at 11:45 or your noon recess down between here and the parking garage, and also to attend the Governor's Arts Awards. But I came from Green River this morning, and I'm flying out to Nashville tomorrow. I live in Nashville and in Green River both, and play music all over the world. But play music about Wyoming. Play music about our culture, our values, the things that we as Wyoming folks hold dear. So this song is about my granddad and my dad. Oh, blue jeans, my daddy's boots up to my knees, worn out belt around my waist, holding up a young man's dreams. Well, my daddy paid all my debts with his tears, his blood, his sweat, never wanting. And without rest, he worked hard so I could have the best. And my daddy gave me the shirt off his back, a gentle nudge towards better things.
With Grandpa's try and my daddy's will, I do my best to make them proud of me. A hero's hat. When medals too well, he fought hard for me and you in the Great War. Well, my granddad flew despite all his fears like heroes do. We had a stroke at 42 and times got hard, but he refused to give up. Still pushing through, it was in his arms that we all grew. And my daddy gave me the shirt off his back, a gentle nudge towards better things. With Grandpa's try and my daddy's will, I do my best to make them proud of me. Seems like ages since I left home, and now I've got three kids of my own. 'Cause my daddy gave me the shirt off his back, a gentle nudge towards better things. With Grandpa's try and my daddy's will, I do my best to make them proud of me. To make them proud of me.
Thank you, guys. Thank you very much.
Thank you for joining us today to celebrate the art. Brian has given each legislator a CD as a thank you for the support of the art. He has also donated 50,000 copies of his album to our troops. This album was just donated for, was just nominated for Country Album of the Year by the Indie Music Award. Members of the House are encouraged to attend, and the Senate are encouraged to attend the luncheon in the Hirschler Tunnel during the noon recess. Thank you again, Brian. Senator Von Platerin.
Mr. President, may I have the privilege of the floor?
You may.
Mr. President, in commemoration of Valentine's Day, which is this Sunday, and so a reminder to the body that it is this Sunday, and appreciation of your service to Campbell County, two of your constituents, and I hope future legislators, and also my grandchildren, with Aiden and Reese Dorr, would like to present you with a Valentine. So if Aiden and Reese would please come in. See if they can find their way through the desk. They're not exactly tall enough, Mr. President, but...
Turn around.
One more good measure. Are they smiling?
Thank you.
Thank you very much. This job does have its perks. Bills on second reading. Senate File 19, second reading of the bill.
Senate File 19, sponsored by Senator Ross. DUI impairment period for enhanced penalties.
There is an amendment, Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 19 and ask that it be read in at this time.
Senate File 19, second reading amendment number 1, page 1, line 15.
Members of the Senate, this is a technical cleanup to amendment that we addressed yesterday, and it was brought to my attention by the Department of Transportation that the site that was previously adopted in the Standing Committee amendment went into paragraph A2 on section 128, 3171-128, and what that did was modify reckless driving suspension, and the intent is to deal with the look back for DUI, which is B2, and therefore we needed to correct that, and so this is a technical correction. Ask for your favorable consideration.
Discussion on the amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Amendment passed. Senate File 19, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time, hearing no objection? It is so ordered. Senate File 20, second reading of the Senate File.
Senate File 20, sponsored by Senator Floyd.
Senate File 20. Sponsored by Senator Floyd Escobel. Text-based communications prohibited while driving.
There is an amendment. The reading clerk will read in the amendment.
Senate File 20, second reading amendment.
This is the bill that we was working on yesterday and was laid back, and the amendment that we was working on when we laid the bill back had not been voted on, so it will need to be read in, and then I believe the sponsors will wish to withdraw it.
Senate File 20, second reading amendment number 2, page 1, line 15.
Senator Meyer. Second amendment number 2 has been withdrawn without objections. There is another amendment.
Senate File 20, second reading amendment number 3, page 1, line 15.
Senator Meyer.
This goes into the bill and describes where this particular offense will be an offense. It limits it to public streets and highways. That's essentially the same limitation that we have for seat belts. We did take out the area there from the previous amendment that it said in motion because that's dealt with in another part of the bill. So it just says on a public street or highway. It's fairly self-explanatory. I ask for your favorable consideration.
Senator, would you move that amendment?
I would move... Mr. President, second reading amendment number 3 to Senate File 20.
Mr. President, the amendment. All in favor, please say aye.
Too many buttons. All in favor, amendment number 3, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion carried. Amendment number 4. Reading clerk, please read in the amendment.
Senate File 20, second reading amendment number 4, page 1, line 16.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move second reading amendment number 4 to Senate File 20 and ask for your favorable consideration. Mr. President, this is a fairly easy amendment. It takes out the offense of reading a text message. There's quite a little bit of discussion yesterday about basically you're doing a legal act, which is flipping your cell phone open and looking at it. It looks exactly like the same act of reading a text message. Frankly, when you read a text message, it's not much more distractive than many other things you do while you're behind the wheel, like adjusting your radio or seeing what's on the call letters on your radio. So I would ask that we have a favorable vote on this. And thank you, Mr. President.
Discussion on Amendment Number 4. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Amendment failed. Amendment Number 5. Read it, clerk, please read it in.
Senate File 20, Second Reading Amendment Number 5, page 2, line 20.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I would move Second Reading Amendment Number 5 to Senate File 20 and ask for your favorable consideration. This goes into the areas of fines. Currently, the penalty section is referenced. That penalty section, I believe, is $200 in 20 days, and it goes up to as much as $500 in 6 months jail time for texting on the third offense. I felt that was a little bit too punitive. The bill itself, I think, is going to be hard to enforce, and frankly, I didn't want to send our teenagers to have the possibility of them going to jail for 20 days or for 6 months or anyone else. We did coincide this with the proposed legislation that's moving through the body on seat belts, which is a $75 fine and a misdemeanor, but no jail time. I would hope that that would be a reasonable deterrent. It is a new offense. Primarily, I believe it's a billboard bill, but $75 should be a reasonable deterrent, especially to the target audience of this bill, which seems to be the young people of the state.
Any discussion on the amendment? Not the question is, those in favor of Amendment 5, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Amendment 5 has passed. Senate File 20, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. Senate File 23, second reading of the Senate File.
Senate File 23, sponsored by the Labor Committee, Unemployment Compensation Amendments.
Senate File 23, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. Senate File 41, second reading of the Senate File.
Senate File 41, sponsored by the Education Committee, Teacher Shortage Loan Repayment Program.
Senate File 41, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. Senate File 45, second reading of the Senate File.
Senate File 45, sponsored by Senator Jennings, School Bus Seat Belts.
Senate File 45, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. Senate File 46, second reading of the Senate File.
Senate File 46, sponsored by School Facilities Committee, School Facilities Charter Schools.
Senate File 46, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. Bills on third reading and final passage. Mr. Majority Leader, do we have a consent list?
Yes, Mr. President. We do have a third reading consent list. The third reading consent list for your consideration for today are as follows. Senate File 3, Apiary Laws. Senate File 4, Special District Elections. Senate File 5, Special District Public Records. Senate File 6, Improvement and Service Districts. Senate File 10, State Parks, Bear River State Park. Senate File 11, State Parks Acquisition and Disposition of Lands. Senate File 12, State Parks and Historic Sites, Boundaries and Designations. Senate File 16, Property Tax Review of Assessment. And finally, Mr. President, Senate File 40, Establishment of Highways.
Those bills in the consent list are Senate File 3, Prairie Laws, Senate File 4, Special District Elections, Senate File 5, Special District Public Records, Senate File 6, Improvement and Service District, Senate File 10, State Parks, Bear River State Park, Senate File 11, State Park Acquisition and Disposition of the Lands, Senate File 12, State Parks and Historic Sites, Boundaries and Designations, Senate File 16, Property Tax Review of Assessment, and Senate File 40, Establishment of Highways. Would anyone like any of these bills removed from the consent list? Senator Schiffer. Okay, Senate File 40 will be removed. Any other bills? Senator Scott.
Mr. President, Senate Files 11 and 12.
Senate File 11 and 12 will be removed. Any other bills? Haven't been read three separate times. The question is, shall these bills pass the Senate? Senate File 3, Senate File 4, Senate File 5, Senate File 6, Senate File 10, Senate File 16. The reading clerk will call the roll.
Anderson.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
Dockstader.
Aye.
Elliott.
Aye.
Esquivel.
Aye.
Geis.
Aye.
Hastert.
Aye.
Honeycutt.
Aye.
Jennings.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Larson.
Aye.
Martin.
Aye.
Massey.
Aye.
Meyer.
Aye.
Meyer S.
Aye.
Nicholas excused. Perkins.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Ross.
Aye.
Schiffer.
Aye.
Scott.
Aye.
Sessions.
Aye.
Townsend.
Aye.
Von Flatern.
Aye.
President Hines.
Aye.
On the consent list, 29 ayes, 1 excused.
Having received the affirmative, excuse me.
Senate File 3, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 3, 29 ayes, 1 excused. Senate File 4, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 4, 29 ayes, 1 excused. Senate File 5, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 6, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 6, 29 ayes, 1 excused. Senate File 10, are there any changes? Case, aye to no. Larson, I to no. Meyer, I to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate file 10. 26 ayes, 3 noes, and 1 excused. Senate file 16. Are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate file 16. 29 ayes, 1 excused.
Having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, Senate File 3, Senate File 4, Senate File 5, Senate File 6, Senate File 10, and Senate File 16 have passed the Senate. Senate File 11, third reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 11. Senate File 11, sponsored by the Travel Committee, State Parks Acquisition and Disposition of Land, an act relating to state parks and cultural resources, be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
Senate File 11, having been read three separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? The Chief Clerk will call, excuse me, Senator Scott.
Mr. President, I ask us to stop and think just a moment. What we're doing here, we're giving to a state agency considerable authority to dispose of some of our state parks, historic sites, up to 5 acres. And I think in some cases that could give them the authority to get rid of the whole thing. And they may even, in fact, intend to use it that way. I'd ask for a little discussion on, is the 5 acres the right amount? Are we giving them too much discretion? What kind of problems are we going to see? I suppose you could ask the same question on the acquisition side, but I'm a little more concerned on the disposal side as to whether we've gone a step too far in this bill. And I couldn't figure out a way to adequately do something about it, to come up with some criteria beyond what's here to restrain them. You can see the key provision. It's over in the back on page 4, where it says de minimis is used in this paragraph, means the property in question is less than 5 acres in size. I wonder if that isn't giving one step too much discretion in the disposal of these state lands.
Senator Burns.
Mr. President, on and for the bill, if 5 acres was too much, I wish the good gentleman from Natrona County couldn't and should have brought a third reading amendment knocking it down to 3 acres or 1 acre. I don't think that is actually the issue. The question is a policy issue here, and there are two handouts related to this bill that I had put out. One is the thicker one, and it goes about some of the sites that we're referring to. And if you look at the bullet point sheet, it says Senate File 11 on top of it. Some of the points here is, for instance, that as the good senator from Laramie mentioned the other day,
The archives already has this authority to get rid of property that has been donated to the state. Department of Transportation and Game and Fish already have this authority with no limit, no property limit at all. Some of the properties that you do see listed in here, and one of the ones that was brought up was Nancy Hanks' grave. It turns out Nancy Hanks' grave may be 20 miles away from where the actual location that the that state parks own it is. The Woodruff cabin, there is no cabin. There's just a marker there, and the owners of the property do not want any public access into there. They don't even want state parks in there. So it's actually just a stone marker. Mr. Chairman, the one point that I did not bring up, and it's my fault a couple of days ago, one of the aspects of this bill is the idea to protect historic sites. And that being that, there, as I said before, there are too many sites for state parks and historic sites to actually adequately take care of, unless we want to raise their appropriation quite a bit. The economic circumstances don't allow that. So there are a number of cases where they would like to dispose of some property to local groups who would be willing to take care of them, more than willing to take care of them. And one of the things that this bill does is it also gets rid of the site criteria for disposal of these properties so they can go to where state parks wants them to go. And I'll give you a good example right by my neighborhood in Johnson County. As I mentioned, the Story Cemetery, Story Banner Kearney Historic Cemetery, wants to expand. It's still an active cemetery. The people of Fort Phil Kearney and state parks have no problem with the idea of selling them an additional 4 acres to expand the cemetery. But if this bill doesn't pass, then they have to go through the site criteria, and that property has to be open to the public for bidding. So somebody could decide, well, hey, this is a real nice spot. I think I'm going to buy it and outbid the cemetery because they just have so much money and go put my house there. Now the cemetery has been completely closed off, and we have now disposed of state property to a private entity or a private person who may want to build their nice little hobby ranch there on what was the view shed and state property for Fort Phil Kearney State Park, after we've gone through the effort of securing that land and keeping it from being developed. So, Mr. President, I would urge the body to vote aye on this bill.
Further discussion on the amendment? Having Senate File 11, having been read three separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? The chief clerk will call the roll.
Anderson?
Aye.
Bebout?
No.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
No.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
No.
Dockstader?
Aye.
Elliott?
Aye.
Esquibel? Geis?
Aye.
Hastert?
Aye.
Honeycutt?
Aye.
Jennings?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Landon?
No.
Larson?
Aye.
Martin?
Aye.
Massey?
Aye.
Meyer?
No.
Meyer-S?
Aye.
Nicholas excused. Perkins?
No.
Peterson?
No.
Ross?
Aye.
Schiffer? Scott?
No.
Sessions?
Aye.
Townsend?
No.
Von Platern?
Aye.
President Hines?
No.
Closing vote?
Geis,
aye to no.
Larson,
aye to no. Closing vote? Closing. Vote closed. 17 ayes. 12 noes, 1 excused.
Senate Files 11, having received an affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, Senate File 11 have passed the Senate. Senate File 12, third reading of the Senate File.
Senate File 12, sponsored by the Travel Committee, State Parks and Historic Site Boundaries and Designation, an act relating to state parks and historic sites, be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
Are you ready for the question, Senator Scott?
I ask this be pulled off the consent list, same reason as the previous bills. I would like a little discussion as to how much discretion this gives state agencies to change the boundaries of these state parks, state recreation areas, and what's the interplay between this bill and the one we just played. Is it make it possible for them to entirely get rid of some of these things? And, Mr. President, I think I can count the votes after the last roll call. I don't want to make a prolonged debate on this.
Senator Burns.
Mr. President, I thank the good senator for his question. The last bill was, in fact, a policy decision. Frankly, this bill is not. This bill is just following up on what Management Council asked the committee to do in interim, and that is to look at issues related to the boundaries. This does not give state parks any additional permission or authority to do anything else. All this does is make the statutes consistent to leave the properties to put the properties into rules and regs. It does not allow them to change any of that. The problem is that some of the property descriptions are obsolete. Some of them are in statute. Some of them aren't. Some of them are in rules. That's all this bill does. There is no policy aspect to this bill. It's just, frankly, it's just housekeeping, and the world's not going to fall if it doesn't pass.
Are you ready for the question? Senate File 12, having been read three separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? The chief clerk will call the roll.
Anderson?
Aye.
Bebout?
Aye.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
No.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
Aye.
Dockstader?
Aye.
Elliott?
Aye.
Esquivel?
Aye.
Geis?
No.
Hastert?
Aye.
Honeycutt? Jennings,
aye.
Johnson,
aye.
Landon,
aye.
Larson,
aye.
Martin,
aye.
Massey,
aye.
Meyer,
no.
Meyer S,
aye.
Nicholas excused, Perkins,
aye.
Peterson,
aye.
Ross,
aye.
Schiffer,
aye.
Scott,
aye.
Sessions,
aye.
Townsend, Von Slatern?
Aye.
President Hines?
Aye.
Closing vote? Closing vote closed. 26 ayes, 3 noes, 1 excused.
Senate File 12, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, Senate File 12 have passed the Senate. Senate File 14, third reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 14, sponsored by the Judiciary Committee, Circuit Court Hearings of Municipal Violations by Juvenile, be it enacted by the Legislature of the State of Wyoming.
There is an amendment. Would the reading clerk please read in the amendment?
Senate File 14, third reading amendment number 1, page 2, line 4.
Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move third reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 14. Apologize to the body for bringing this on third reading. This is really a cleanup language, but we had a little difficulty in getting the language right, and I wasn't able to get it out on second reading. Originally, this bill, and if you look at paragraph A of the bill, it establishes a procedure for a circuit court to hear all cases of a municipality should they really not want to have a municipal court.
the situation that we're talking about here is not all cases, but a select few cases. The original bill had language in it, in paragraph B on page 2, that said that made cross-reference back to paragraph A. That was taken out by the committee during all cases, and it didn't seem apropos. But after testimony in committee, there are a number of accounting things that need to go on should the circuit court and municipalities decide to an agreement where they would be hearing juvenile cases. There still needs to be a contract. There still needs to be accounting of the funds. And so those contracts still need to be approved by the Supreme Court, and they need to be agreed on between the various entities. So that's what this language does is in this amendment is to add in a new paragraph C that basically paraphrases the language in A, except that we're not requiring that the circuit court take all cases from a municipality, just certain juvenile cases. And so, therefore, we needed this language to make sure that that the contracts are approved by the Supreme Court, and I'd urge a favorable consideration.
Discussion on the amendment? All in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Amendment passed. Are you ready for the question? Senate File 14, having been read three separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? The chief clerk will call the roll.
Anderson.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
Dockstader.
Aye.
Elliott.
Aye.
Esquibel.
Aye.
Geis.
Aye.
Hastert.
Aye.
Honeycutt.
Aye.
Jennings.
Aye.
Johnson. Landon,
aye.
Larson,
aye.
Martin,
aye.
Massey,
aye.
Meyer,
aye.
Meyer-S,
aye.
Nicholas excused, Perkins,
aye.
Peterson,
aye.
Ross,
aye.
Schiffer,
aye.
Scott,
aye.
Sessions,
aye.
Townsend,
aye.
Bonflatern,
aye.
President Hines.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing, vote closed. 29 ayes, 1 excused.
Senate File 14, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, Senate File 14 has passed the Senate. Senate File 17, third reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 17, sponsored by the Revenue Committee, Statement of Consideration, an act relating to property, be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
There is an amendment. Will the reading clerk please read in the amendment?
Senate File 17, third reading amendment number 1, page 2, line 8.
Senator Meyer. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move first amendment to third reading of the Senate File 17 and ask for your favorable consideration. Mr. President, this does only one thing. This says that any public record shall be redacted to remove any personal identifying information. I think back what this body has done as far as identity theft. I remember the days that the Minerals Committee spent on identity theft here just not too long ago. And then I look at the purpose of this bill. And the purpose of this bill, from what I can tell, is that you want to have the information out there on sales. You want to know what properties cost. This is the statement of consideration. If you remove this information, what you're going to get the type of the property, whether it's land or buildings, residential, whether it has outbuildings, whether it's buildings only, whether it's land or a mobile home, land or the improvements. You're going to find out whether there's a well, a septic, a city water, a sewer, natural gas, a telephone, a cistern available, or none of the above. That's going to help you determine what the property is and how it's going to relate to the property that you want to sell or you want to purchase. And you're also going to get the term for sale, the date the sale, the price was agreed to, the total amount to be paid for the property, whether or not the buildings were on there, and if yes, what's a brief description. You're also going to find out what kind of financing was available, how the property was financed, whether it was a contract for deed, an assumption, a balloon, other cash, conventional, FHA, VA, WCDA. The date that sale was offered, the down payment, the interest rate, the terms of the loan, the points paid by the seller, and assumptions or a loan amount. You're going to get all of that in your statement in consideration. The question really is that if you have all that information, is that enough information for you to help in your taxes, to help a young person that wants to buy a home? Is that enough information out in the public that heretofore has never been in the public, has been totally confidential? Or do you actually need to know the identifying information of the buyers and the sellers? But frankly, I don't believe you need that identifying information. If you really want to get it, I guess you could probably go to the internet, hire somebody. There's sites out there where you can type in an address and you can get it, but it's going to cost you money to do it. But I don't think the state should be in the business of supplying it freely, because that's personal information. You have some right to privacy, and the state should have some duty to protect that right to privacy. This is just a small step. It's not a magic bullet or a silver bullet or anything else, but I think it's the right thing to do.
Senator Schiffer.
And Mr. President, I ask the Senate to resist this amendment. Let's remember what we're doing here. We're trying to inform the property taxpayers. When we all start paying property tax on our residences, it's determined by the market value. And what this bill gets to is saying, folks, we're going to base public policy, your tax levy, on these statements of consideration. You have the right to know how your taxes were determined. That's really fundamental, that you ought to be able to look and see why did my taxes go up 40 or 50% in 1 year or over the last 2 or 3 years. Without the ability to look at this information and to compare what does my property look like compared to all the other sales in my county or area, you don't have a leg to stand on when you go into one of those hearings. Second thing, purchase of a home normally is the single largest investment that any of us makes. An informed decision is a better decision. What we're saying here is you have a right to see what the market is, whether it's in Johnson County or Uinta County, wherever you want to move to, you have the right to look and see. You have the ability to go out and look at the property, and guess what? That's critical. You got to be able to go find it and take a look at it. For most of us, it's absolutely essential to be able to go there and say, what's it look like? Those types of things. The third point is that in terms of identity theft, I've actually never tried to steal an identity, but I don't believe I'd start with a statement of consideration. I think your normal identity thieves, that's not the document of choice. They have other ways of doing it, and I can't divulge that to you, or I'd probably be incarcerated or disappear into DCI. But truly, folks, the identity thieves in Russia do not have a perpetual statements of consideration monitoring program so they can steal identities. That's not the way those guys operate, and I can meet with somebody privately and explain exactly how that's done, but I can't do it on the floor, Mr. President, honest. I urge your resistance to this amendment.
Senator Senator Scott.
Mr. President, yeas and nays, please. Mr. President, I have a concern with what we're talking about here, and I've got a question for both the proponents and the opponents of this amendment. If this passes, will the address of the property be one of those personally identifying items that is redacted? And that's a key consideration, because I've heard I don't know how many times that when it comes to real estate, the three most important factors on the value are location, location, and location. And it does seem to me, once you know the address, you can go to the courthouse and with relative ease usually find out the identity of the parties involved. Now, if they've used some corporate structure to buy it or something like that, you may not get very far. But by and large, you can find out whose it was and who they sold it to and that sort of thing. That's public record. So my question is, if this passes, will we lose the address of the property? And that is a key factor in being able to determine what the value of the property is and how much you can use this information if what you want to do is challenge your property tax.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'm still trying to decide how I'm going to vote on this amendment. And I appreciate my good colleague from Natrona County's question, because it's a very good question, whether or not the address would be personally identifying information. The couple things I'm wondering about as we look at this amendment is, one, I just wanted, we're dealing with residential property, and for the most part, my understanding, I believe that this information is available to appraisers, and it's available to anybody who's on multi-list. So if you go through a realtor, it's on multi-list. That information's out there, and you may have seen that if your realtor's giving you a market analysis at some point where they go out and they analyze those houses. They have that information. So the information's confidential except for those that get to participate in the confidence. So, I'm struggling with this one because that information's out there, and it's very available. If you have the address, you can call up the assessor. If you have the property address, you can call up the assessor and ask who's the owner of that property, and they'll give that to you. That's available for the asking. So, I mean, it's a wonderful attempt, and I appreciate the issue of privacy, and generally inclined to vote for that. But I'm struggling with, one, if it really does anything for us, and two, is the address part of that?
Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. President. I rise in support of the amendment with the cautions that our colleague from Natrona County pointed out. I have to confess that I did not go there, and obviously I think the address is critical. But, there's no question, colleagues, that we're throwing the door pretty wide open here, and I'm just not sure we have to throw it so wide open that we put a hole in the wall. My other colleague from Natrona County did point out another fact, which is if you really desperately need to find out who owns that property, you can probably do it. But our good friend who authored this amendment is exactly right. I'm not sure that this doesn't provide everything you need to have to find out whether or not your taxes are fair. And isn't that really what we're all about with this? We're trying to give people an opportunity to decide if they've been assessed at a fair rate. And I'm not sure that you need to have all of that personal information. So I support the amendment. I think it's a good one.
Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. President. On and against the amendment. Folks, for years in my law firm, we used to purchase a book, and for the life of me, I'm trying to think of the name of it, but it was published. We quit using it because it was really expensive, but it had a, you could go look at the address. It would tell you who owned the property. Not only that, it would give phone numbers. It would say what your profession was and all of that. Well, we stopped using that in the law firm because you can get it on the internet. And why pay $1,000 for this book? That was around for years. I assume that it's still around. So it seems to me that, this stuff is already out there. This isn't rocket science. And it seems to me we're protecting nothing, really, as the good senator from Laramie said yesterday. What is the deal that, technology has moved way beyond those books that we used to purchase. So I'd urge your defeat of the amendment.
Senator Larson.
Mr. President, I too would urge you to vote against the amendment. There's absolutely no doubt in my mind that the address of the property would be omitted if this amendment passes. And the junior senator from Natrona County is right. You can go through, the person wanting to research that, they can go through a whole lot of processes or pay $100 for the book that was referred to earlier or do a bunch of other things. The purpose of this is to make that easier for the person that wishes to appeal their taxes and find out where they are. The address would probably, I think, be omitted if this amendment passes. And without the address, you have nothing. You really, it isn't of a whole lot of value in trying to make that determination unless you know where the property is. And so, we have come so far, as was mentioned earlier by the good senator from Cheyenne, that yeah, you can find out all these things anyway. So it isn't anything that's going to be used by somebody trying to steal an identity. They can get any of that information anyway. But it does make it easier for the person who wishes to see whether or not they wish to appeal their property taxes. And it makes them easier to then go and find and make a case that they have been overcharged. And so I would urge you to defeat the amendment, move the bill on, and take a step to help make transparency in the assessment of residential, and remember it's only residential, of residential property values within the state of Wyoming.
Senator Dockstader.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd like to remind the body that in the absence of property tax relief, which we have seemed to fail to accomplish on both sides of this building for many years now, to the point where we can fill a large binder of our attempts, we're not getting anything done with the property tax reliefs. So obviously our next step would be information and transparency. That's our ultimate goal. And I'd urge your defeat of the amendment and passage of the bill. Thank you.
Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. President. I think the address has to be there because that's the tracking number. But I don't think that I need to be there. I don't need to be brought into a disagreement that my neighbor has with the county on his taxes. If he wants to look at, and again, remember, they clear these records every 3 years. So I'm just not going to sell my house, and I'm just going to stay in it forever, and I'm out of the transaction. But there's no reason that your personal information, your name, has to be in there for all the other information for your neighbor to argue his taxes. The address has to be there. That's the tracking number, which your name doesn't have to be. If my neighbor really wants to drag me into it, he can come over and knock on the door. He doesn't need to be able to look it up on the county. And just because private industry has gone out and created books and directories and put our names on the internet doesn't mean that the state has to participate in that. Just because it's already out there in the public domain doesn't mean that the state has to be a participant in publishing your name and your address and all that kind of stuff. Take our names off of it, leave the address on it, let's pass the amendment and go on with the bill.
Further discussion on the amendment? Question been called for. The Senator Meyer.
What the market is. Because the statement of consideration is still there. All those things that say what the house is worth is still there. Personal identifying information, it's the name and the telephone number. So the address should stay there, and it is location will do. It's telling you what the houses are worth so you can make that comparison, whether you're protesting your taxes or whether you're trying to enter the real estate market.
The ayes and nays have been called for in this amendment. Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson?
Aye.
Bebout?
No.
Burns?
No.
Case?
No.
Coe?
No.
Cooper?
No.
Dockstader?
No.
Elliott?
No.
Esquibel?
No.
Geis?
Aye.
Hastert?
Aye.
Johnson?
No.
Landon?
Aye.
Massey?
Aye.
Meyer?
Aye.
Meyer S?
No.
Nicholas excused. Perkins?
Aye.
Ross?
No.
Schiff?
No.
Scott?
No.
Sessions?
No.
Townsend?
Aye.
Von Flatern?
No.
President Hines?
Aye.
Closing vote? Closing. Vote closed. 12 ayes, 17 noes, 1 excused.
We will back on the bill. Senate File 17 having been read 3 separate times. The question is, shall the bill pass? The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson?
No.
Bebout?
No.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
No.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
Aye.
Dockstader?
Aye.
Elliott?
Aye.
Esquibel?
Aye.
Geis?
No.
Hastert?
Aye.
Honeycutt?
No.
Jennings?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Landon?
No.
Massey?
No.
Meyer?
No.
Meyer S? Nicholas excused. Perkins?
Aye.
Peterson? Ross? Schiffer?
Aye.
Scott? Sessions?
Aye.
Aye.
President
Hines?
No.
Closing vote? Closing. Vote closed. 19 ayes, 10 noes, 1 excused.
Senate File 17, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, Senate File 17 has passed the Senate. Senate File 40, third reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 40, sponsored by Senator Cooper, Establishment of Highways, an act relating to the establishment of highways, be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
Senator Schiffer.
President, I asked for this bill to be pulled off the consent list. I ask the Senate to think carefully before you pass this bill. What this does, this allows a county commission to come in and declare, ostensibly, declare a right-of-way, defining what a trail is, what a trail used to be, what it might be, all those things. But when that actually happens, and particularly with the amount of public ground that we have in this state, it can and will severely impact people who live close to or lease or operate on the public ground. Make no mistake, nobody's going to go back to Washington and try and change the law back there. Given the state of our courts and the activist judges we have, the avenue to change it is to go to court. And the county in question certainly has the money and the legal budget to do the Beltway. they're going to go to the black robes. In terms of what it does, if you're an operator, and it doesn't matter whether you're ag, whether you're mineral, anything, any operation that encompasses the use of the public ground, it means that when we start talking about ways of necessity, you can get a declaration from the county commissioners without any of the safeguards of a way of necessity across that public ground. And that's what this amounts to. If you go look at the procedures, it's got to be the least harm. This circumvents that completely. This is just a declaration. Boom. There's a road there. It may be nothing but sagebrush and the scenic ground we all cherish, but by declaration, the county commission can say, yeah, there was a road there. Sometime in the last 300 years, we're going to go ahead and declare it a road. We have other ways to establish roads that are legal, that offer at least a hearing, a sense of fair play, rather than a declaration by county commission. I urge you to vote this bill down. Again, because I think we voted it down, as I recall, since I've been here about 5 times. And I really enjoy seeing it come back again. The print, you know, first time I saw it, I think it was done with a quill, actually. But now we print it so you can actually read the son of a gun. I urge you to vote no.
Senator Cooper.
Thank you, Mr. President. You've heard me expound on this, as the good senator from Johnson County said, and he too. You folks ought to be well conditioned to this bill by now. And he's right, you know, 1866... Maybe it was written with a quill. I'm not sure back in those days, but that's when the original law was written. I think lawyers are truly amazing sometimes. And not only that, is sometimes they can perform magic. You know, at least I think they can. Maybe sleight of hand, I'm not sure. But... But what I'm getting to is if you look on the bill on line 8 on page 2, it says, except for roads located on federal public lands, and it talks about public lands. And I know in the past we've heard of this as being some sort of private land takings bill. And for the life of me, I don't know where you can get the magic to turn the words federal land into private land. But I don't know. Won't go there any further, I guess. One thing about it is that some of you in here have been commissioners and some of you have been around commissioners and know that the fact that, and the public knows this because many commissions turn the request for road dedication and establishment down. And the reason they do that, and the reason that counties don't create a lot of public roads to begin with or establish them, is because they know they're going to have to pay for those things forever and maintain them. And that's a very, very large expense to a county. Just the maintenance of roads outside of the sheriff's department is probably the largest single budget item on any county's budget in most cases. And so they're not going to go out and just start creating roads just because they like to create roads, because it's a very, very expensive proposition. Well, with that, folks, I'd like you to ask you to vote in the affirmative for this bill so we can get on with it.
Senator Doc Spatter.
Thank you, Mr. President. Maybe the key word here in this piece of legislation is access, and bringing control of that access back into the hands of your county commissioners. It's not just one county, but a lot of our counties are affected by public lands. There's a reason it keeps coming back. They're asking for some help and having control at the local level. So let's avoid a sixth review of this piece of legislation and pass it this year. Thank you.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, this
piece of legislation has very important implications for two of the key groups that I represent that are my constituents. One is the sportsman. The federal government is gradually closing off the practical access to the public land. This bill gives us some ability to do something about some of that where there was a previously established road. We can't do as much as many of us might like, but it is some ability to deal with that problem. The sportsmen need that access. They want that access. This bill is important to them. The second group is very important in my district, is the mineral industry. And they're having the same problem as the sportsmen. They're being blocked out of access to the public land. And again, this bill won't solve all their problems, but it's a tool that can help with at least some of them. And these are public lands we're talking about here. Our constitutional and statutory provisions on ways of necessity can't be used, as I understand, on the federal land. Those are federal. State constitutional provision can't, we can't go out and condemn something the federal government owns, as far as I know. And I don't see anything in here that changes any existing law with regard to private property, roads across private property. So for all those reasons, I urge the Senate to pass this bill.
Senator Massey.
Mr. President, just for clarification and looking at the new language on page 2, it talks about the roads that are eligible to be condemned or designated as highways are ones that go to private residences or agricultural operations. It has nothing to do with hunting grounds. It's a double-edged sword. You're likely to get somebody who wants a highway to a private residence across federal lands go right through the middle of critical habitat for wintering elk, or right smack through places where an agricultural operation has their cattle or sheep grazing. So it's a double-edged sword. I don't think that we can say that this is something specifically for sportsmen.
Are you ready for the question? Senate File 40, having been read 3 separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? The chief clerk will call the roll.
Anderson?
No.
Bebout?
Aye.
Burns?
No.
Case?
No.
Coe? Cooper?
Aye.
Dockstader?
Aye.
Elliott?
Aye.
Esquibel?
No.
Geis?
Aye.
Hastert?
No.
Honeycutt?
Aye.
Jennings?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Landon?
Aye.
Larson?
Aye.
Martin?
No.
Massey?
No.
Meyer?
Aye.
Meyer-S? Nicholas excused. Perkins?
No.
Peterson?
Aye.
Ross?
No.
Schiffer?
No.
Scott?
Aye.
Sessions?
No.
Townsend?
Aye.
Von Flatern?
Aye.
President Hines?
Aye.
Closing vote? Closing. Vote closed. 17 ayes, 12 noes, 1 excused.
Senate File 40, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, Senate File 40 have passed the Senate. Consideration, Senator Jennings.
Mr. President, may I have privilege of the floor?
You may.
Mr. President, I don't know if you've noticed, but in the last 10 minutes, the good looks of the Senate have increased greatly, and that's due to a whole herd of Republican women that are here on their convention. So, Mr. President and Senate, would you join me in welcoming the beauty of Wyoming, the Republican women?
Welcome to the Senate, ladies. Next item, consideration bills in general file. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that the Senate resolve itself into the Committee of the Whole.
You've heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion carried. Senator Landon.
Committee of the Whole will please come to order. First bill for our consideration. Senate File 28. Will the reading clerk please read the Senate file?
Senate File Number 28, sponsored by Senator Martin, State Load and Investment Board Loan Refinancing and Act Relating to Intergovernmental Programs. It was referred to Committee Number 3, Revenue. The report's back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Case, Larson, Martin, Perkins, and Schiffer, Senator Schiffer, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Schiffer?
Mr. Chairman, I move when the Committee of the Whole rises. State Loan and Investment Board Loan Refinancing. There is an amendment, and I would ask that the reading clerk read in the amendment at this time.
Senate File 28, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 2, line 5.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to yield the floor to the sponsor of the bill, Senator Martin.
Senator Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for the opportunity to present Senate File 28, State Loan and Investment Board Loan Refinancing. As I mentioned when we introduced this bill, I bring it at the request of the Office of State Land and Investment. Mr. Chairman, the Joint Powers Act loan program has been in existence since 1974. Pursuant to this program, the State Land and Investment Board provide loans to local governmental entities to finance infrastructure improvements. The Permanent Mineral Trust Fund and other unobligated permanent funds are the source of the funds for the Joint Powers Act loan program. JPA loans are made only for facilities generating user fees and only to the extent that the user fees will repay the loan such that the loan can be considered a reasonable and prudent investment of the state permanent funds. Nevertheless, though, as SLIB has experienced with some loans, circumstances occur which cause the revenue generated by the facility to be inadequate for making payments under the current terms of the loan. Presently, the SLIB does not have the flexibility to offer a solution that may present relief for loan recipients or to protect the permanent funds. In particular, the SLIB does not have the statutory authority to refinance or to reamortize Joint Power Act loans issued pursuant to Wyoming Statute 16-1109. If we pass Senate File 28, it will provide the SLIB with its ability to refinance reamortized Joint Power Act loans, and the legislature has previously provided this authority for the SLIB to refinance or reamortize farm loans in Wyoming Statute 1134-118. Similar authority for the JPA loan program would be helpful in allowing the SLIB the flexibility to refinance and reamortize non-performing Joint Powers Act loans in order to better protect the permanent funds invested in such loans. Mr. Chairman, quickly, on page 1, lines 8 and 9, I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. The what we're doing with this piece of legislation is adding a new subsection E, which begins on page 1, lines 14 through page 2, lines 11, which states, the board, whenever it deems necessary for the better protection of permanent funds of the state invested in loans under this section, may refinance any delinquent loan and reamortize the loan over not more than 30 years from the date of refinancing. All costs of refinancing the loan, including the cost of having the abstract brought down to date, shall be paid by the borrowing governmental entity, and no loan shall be refinanced where it appears refinancing will jeopardize the collection of the loan. An additional fee of 1% of the amount of the reamortized loan shall be paid by the borrowing governmental entity to the board to be credited to the loss reserve account created Wyoming Statute 16-1-110 and provided by subsection A of this section. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to go back to the amendment. And simply what that amendment was, on page 2, line 5, deleted the word governmental, and page 2, line 9, also deleted governmental, and just leave it as the borrowing entity, because there are some participants in this program that may not be considered a governmental entity, like the University of Wyoming and some other folks. So with that, I would ask for favorable consideration on the vote on the amendment, and then we can take up.
Senator Martin, could you move the amendment, please?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I'll move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 28 and ask for your favorable consideration.
Will the reading clerk please read the amendment? I think we did that. Thank you. Do I hear a question on the amendment? Questions have been called. All in favor of Senator Martin's motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 28, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, we're back on the bill. Senator Martin.
Mr. Chairman, at this time I'd be glad to answer any questions.
We have a question on the bill. All those in favor of Senator Schiffer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 28, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 28 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration, Senator Elliott. Senator Elliott, go ahead.
I'm advised that we have a rather large group of individuals, students and adults from Carbon County Higher Education Number 2. They're in the West Balcony and are learning about our legislative process. Ask my colleagues to welcome them. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Elliott, and we welcome you to the Senate. We hope you have a great day learning about the legislative process. As I mentioned, the next Senate file for our consideration is Senate File 43. Will the reading clerk please read the bill?
Senate File Number 43, sponsored by Senator S. Meyer, Game and Fish Special Hunting Season Extension. It was referred to Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources. Reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Burns, Cole, Dockstetter, Jennings, S. Meyer, Senator Burns, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Meyer.
Mr. President, I move Senate File 43, Game and Fish Special Hunting
season's extension and ask you for your favorable consideration. There is a standing committee amendment, and it is just after the word disabilities on line 16, insert as established by commission rule and regulation. I ask you for your favorable consideration of the amendment.
Will the reading clerk please read in the amendment?
Senate File 43, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 16.
Do I hear a question on the amendment?
She asked it.
Senator Meyer, could you move the amendment, please? Thank you.
Oh.
I thought you did that, but...
Mr. President, I move second or first reading amendment, Standing Committee Amendment to Senate File 43.
Thank you, Senator. Are you ready for the question on the amendment? All those in favor of Senator Meyer's motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 43, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The amendment passes. We're back on the bill. Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Again, I wanted to point out to you that I bring this bill on behalf of one of the constituents in my district. This is a young man who is disabled and would like the opportunity to be able to hunt at times that it would not interfere with other hunters. And it would give him the opportunity, because he is wheelchair bound, to be able to get to areas without disturbing these hunters, and also give him the opportunity, and those who are disabled, to be able to hunt in a time and in locations that are difficult to get to. I have passed around a letter from this young man, and I'm going to refer to it just briefly. And what he says in this letter is, I'm an avid hunter, but being in a wheelchair poses some difficulties while hunting. Being confined to a vehicle not only puts hunters with disabilities at a disadvantage, but when we go driving down a ridge or up a canyon, we are risking ruining a hunt for able-bodied hunters that has spent a lot of time in hiking into those areas. And what he has done is he has based this bill on the Utah bill. And what it does, it gives the commission, the Game and Fish Commission, the opportunity to extend hunting at times that they deem is appropriate. This could be either before or after a hunting season and in areas where there are sufficient game for disabled hunters. I ask for your favorable consideration of this bill. It's a short bill, but it's important to the hunters with disabilities in our state. Thank you.
Senator Meyer, thank you, and thank you for covering for the good chairman and moving this bill. Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Meyer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 43, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Senate File 43 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration, Senate File 47. Would the reading clerk please read the bill?
Senate File 47, sponsored by Senator Schiffer, Paramutual Wagering Simulcasting, was referred to Committee Number 3, Revenue. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Case, Larson, Martin, Perkins, and Schiffer. Senator Schiffer, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Schiffer?
Mr. Chairman, I move in the Committee of the Whole rise and report it do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 47, Paramutual Wagering Simulcasting. Mr. Chairman, I'd like at this time to request the reading clerk to read in Senate File 47, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1.
Senate File 47, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 7.
Mr. Chairman, what this bill is, this is an economic development bill. This is trying to add a little bit of incentive for the horse industry in Wyoming by ensuring that the track, we only have actually one track in Wyoming that has live horse racing. It's over in Uinta County, and the name of the track is Evanston Downs. If you haven't been there, I urge you to go. It's a beautiful little facility in a beautiful part of this state. And the people over there are always delighted to see racing fans show up on the days that they hold racing. The purpose of this bill is to ensure that along with the simulcasting, that we also have actual racing days. And what it does, it requires the Racing Commission, which is the governing board of live horse racing and simulcasting, as a matter of fact, to within their authority that they may require a certain number of racing days per year for live horse racing. Mr. Chairman will recall that the size of the purses in horse racing, to a great extent, is determined by the simulcasting event, where they take a percentage of simulcast money and devote that to the horse industry to promote racing. Mr. Chairman, I'll walk through the bill with the amendment, and then I'll ask for action on the amendment. Over the critical language, we start. The amendment deletes on page 2, lines 4 through 13, through, and then we go, on page 1, deletes lines 14 through 16, and over on page 2, 1 through 12. The next, starting on line 14, we define the Horsemen's Association. That's the group on the track that negotiates for the conditions on the track. We need that definition, needs to go in the statute. We've never defined that. That just says it's the majority of the owners and trainers. Then going on to the Standing Committee Amendment, under 1125.104, this is the Paramutual Commission. And what it says is, subparagraph M, the commission is authorized to establish the number of actual racing days to qualify for a simulcast event. That's where they set the number of days of actual racing that will occur at Evanston Downs. It's, as I say, that we're kind of trying to grow this industry, the horse racing industry, to diversify the economy over there in Uinta County, and really across the state, because people enjoy taking their horses to the races and participating in the festivities at Evanston Downs. Mr. Chairman, I'll try and answer any questions.
Thank you, Senator Schiffer. Questions on the amendment?
He
hasn't
moved it.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, at this
time, Senator Schiffer, would you move the amendment, please? Thank you. Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I may ask the sponsor to remind us what simulcast is. But I remember we worked on this bill a couple years ago when we passed it, and it seemed like it was some kind of a machine that you put horse data in or something and jockeys. But anyway, if the sponsor would kind of update us on what simulcast really is.
Other questions, comments? On the amendment or the bill? The amendment for Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, to answer my colleague from Natrona County's question, simulcast is actually where it's a way of wagering off of the site of the track itself. There's a site, I'm trying to remember, there's one here in Cheyenne, there's one in Casper, there's one in Rock Springs, and obviously one over in Uinta County. What you do with simulcast, you can bet on live horse races virtually around the world if you choose to, if the person that's producing the simulcast chooses to do that. It's done at track odds. And what they do, the way it works, horse racing in this state, or actually any other state, but in this state, is a percentage of the money that's wagered goes back to the home state. And that money then is what provides the purses for the winning horse and the second place and third place horse when they actually run on the track. That's the revenue. And what I'm getting at is that's the money that's going to be pumped back into our horse industry as we develop this to grow that industry and provide the good jobs and the excitement and things of a vibrant horse industry in the state of Wyoming.
We're on the amendment, Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The amendment really goes to the heart of the bill, too. But I believe the bill that the good senator from Natrona County was referring to is what I call the dead horse racing bill. That would allow them, by some kind of manipulation, which I didn't fully understand and still don't, to put horses from races that took place in the past and try to re-handicap and let them bet. That was a different piece of legislation. This one, as it is now, is really allows them, as was explained by the good chairman of the committee, all it's doing is making it so that if you do have a track and you're going to simulcast races, that you have to at least put on a few races as going to be set by the Racing Commission. I just want to remind everybody, this is not state funds. The Racing Commission, the industry is, and the commission is self-supporting. It is. They derive their revenue, as was indicated by the chairman. So there are basically no state funds involved, and it's just an attempt to encourage horse racing within the state of Wyoming and allows the Racing Commission to talk with and negotiate with the owner of the only active track in the state to try to get him to put on some more races.
Thank you, Senator Larson. We do have a standing committee amendment. Do I hear a question on the amendment? Question has been called for. All those in favor of Senator Schiffer's motion to adopt standing committee amendment number 1 to Senate File 47, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? We're back on the bill now. Senator Coe. Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, I'll try and answer any questions on the bill as amended. If there are no questions, I'd ask for the question.
You ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Schiffer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 47, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. Senate File 47 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration, Senate File 24. Would the reading clerk please read Senate File 24.
Senate File 24, sponsored by Senator Martin, Community-Based In-Home Services. Excuse me. It was referred to Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Hastert, Honeycutt, Landon, Schiffer, and Scott. Senator Scott, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Scott?
Mr. Chairman, I move when the Committee of the Whole rise and report it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 24 do pass. There were no standing committee amendments, and to explain this good little Senate file, I yield to the sponsor, Senator Martin.
Thank you, Senator Scott. Senator Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for the opportunity to present Senate File 24, Community-Based In-Home Services, today. And I bring this bill to you today as a request from the Wyoming Department of Health Aging Division. Community-Based In-Home Services Program is used to provide services to those qualified individuals who are at risk of premature institutionalization. The CBIHS program is fully funded by state dollars. These services are designed to keep people in the least restrictive environment for as long as possible. There are approximately 3,000 Wyoming residents currently receiving services through this program, and a needs assessment called an aging needs and evaluation summary is conducted on each participant in the program at no cost to the program. In 2007, Senate File 89 added new language to the statute authorizing the CBIHS program. The issue created by this language was a requirement that the assessment be changed from the AGNES assessment to the LT-101 assessment. LT-101 is performed by a local public health nursing staff establishing functional eligibility for Medicaid coverage. To determine functional eligibility, an LT-101 assessment is completed for each client at a cost of $125 per assessment. The LT-101 assessment is much more restrictive than the current AGNES assessment and requires a higher level of functional limitations than the CBHS intends. An LT-101 assessment is cost prohibitive to the CBHS program, as costs for an estimated 3,000 assessments per year would exceed $375,000. The Aging Division has asked that the language in subsection A on page 2, line 2, which states, as determined by consultation and assessment pursuant to the Wyoming Long-Term Care Choices Act, be deleted so that a LT-101 assessment is not required for these important stopgap services to clients who need some assistance, are not Medicaid eligible, and are at risk of premature institutionalization. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you, Senator Martin. Any questions on Senate File 24? Do I hear a question? All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 24, please say aye. Any opposed? No. Senate File 24 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration, Senate File 8. Would the reading clerk please read the bill? Senator Escobel first.
Mr. Chairman, may I have a privilege of the floor?
You may.
Mr. Chairman, members of the body, I'd like to introduce my daughter, Jacqueline, who's over here in front of us. And for some of you that might remember, they were with me in the House 7 years ago. I introduced my daughter, Jacqueline, with her newborn son at that time. And today he's a student page on the other side of the aisle. Would you join me in welcoming my daughter, Jacqueline, up there on the balcony?
Thank you, Senator, for that introduction. Welcome to the Senate. And again, would the reading clerk please read the bill?
Senate File 8, sponsored by the Judiciary Committee, Medical Support of Children. It was referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. Reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Senators Meyer, S., Perkins, Ross, and Sessions, Senator Ross, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Ross?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report, it do so with a do-pass recommendation on Senate File 8, Medical Support of Children. Members of the body, I explained this bill on introduction. And as I explained to you, it is a component of welfare reform, and this bill is required by the federal government with regard to our child support program, which is a component of welfare reform. The purpose of this bill is to lower federal Medicaid costs. We can debate till the cows come home whether or not that's good policy or not to balance the Medicaid budget on the backs of child support or health insurance, children's health insurance in domestic relations orders, and that includes paternity and divorces and so forth. But that is the mandate of the feds, and we delayed last year implementing this because we just didn't really want to deal with it. But this year we do. And we don't have a choice. And what is at risk if we don't pass this bill is consequences of reductions in our TANF dollars. And the federal component of our TANF dollars is about $23 million a year. So we are at the end of the grace period that the feds have given us. And so here you go. Here's the bill. Basically, right now we do require that medical insurance be provided in domestic relations orders. This particular bill or mandate from the feds require that we define three things: accessible, reasonable cost, and cash medical support. And we have done that, and you'll see that on page 3 of the bill. So what does this bill do? It says that one or both parents has to have health insurance at a reasonable cost for benefits for children under an insurance policy that are accessible to the children. We defined accessible as a health care plan that is available and provides coverage for the child residing within the geographic area. And what does that mean? Well, you have certain situations where you have, let's say, the non-custodial parent living in Colorado. And if that individual buys a policy, and in Colorado they have HMOs, so they could buy a Humana policy, but it wouldn't cover the child in Wyoming. So it has to be a policy that covers the child in the geographic area where the child's at. Then almost every order that I've seen, at least in recent, since we passed welfare reform, all has requirements that the parents be responsible for the non-covered medical expenses, and that's in paragraph B on page 2. And we basically say that those uncovered medical expenses that are paid for by the parents constitute cash medical support. And you'll find that in on page 3. And then we are allowed some leeway in defining what is reasonable cost. And we have defined what is a reasonable cost for health insurance for the children themselves. That's, we're only talking about children policies. That it be no more than 5% of the party's income as defined by 20-2-303. Now, what that is, in essence, is gross income when you look at the definition of in the child support guidelines. 303 is any income from any source. So we could have gone to net income, but that becomes more onerous potentially. So if a policy in Wyoming for a child costs more than 5% of the parents' gross income, then they're excused. And what would happen is that both parents would be responsible for anything not covered. So that, in essence, is the bill. It is required that we do this year or risk federal dollars. So those are the kinds of pills that we have to swallow these days, whether or not we like it. So I'd urge your favorable consideration.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. Senator Beabout.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a quick question. Do you have a dollar amount or approximate amount of the impact of the state on the TANF funds?
Senator Ross.
Well, Mr. Chairman, that is unknown. It's a good question. Was asked in committee what the risk is. The risk is all to maybe some proportion of the TANF dollars, and of course the TANF dollars were, the testimony in committee was $23 million a year. So depending on how adamant the feds are in this thing, I mean, all of that money's at risk. It may be some proportion below that, but nobody knows the answer to that. I think we're well within our parameters. We tried to keep it on the low side. Some states have gone as high as 8% or even higher. They gave us a range. We selected the lowest part of the range, which was 5%.
Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Could the sponsor remind us what we use TANF money for?
And are there any other conditions on the TANF money? Are we being threatened with withdrawal on other strings attached to that money?
Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. TANF basically means temporary assistance to needy families. That's the acronym. Before that, it was, Senator from Natrona County, remember what it was, but before we went to TANF, it was another acronym. But in essence, it is your welfare dollars. And it goes to a whole host of different programs. And whether or not there are strings in every federal dollar, it seems like, that we receive, but whether or not any of the other strings are at risk at this point in time, I don't know. But what I do know is this particular string is at risk if we don't do what we do here. So, I mean, we use TANF dollars for a lot of different things, and I haven't been on Labor, Health, and Social Services for quite some time, but I mean, there's a whole host of things that that those dollars are used for, and you certainly don't want to lose that kind of funding.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, just to add to the anger, I guess, at the feds, we didn't pass this last year, and the witness, the testimony we had was that they actually gave us through the intervention of the particular witness, the feds actually gave us an extra year on this. She does not give us any guarantee that she could get another year out of him. So if you don't pass this, the feds are going to start cutting on our TANF money.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, the TANF money, basically it was based on what we were getting on the old welfare system. And like good Senator from Laramie County, I've forgotten the name of that particular disaster. But what happened was we reduced our caseload by more than 90%. So very little of this money is actually being used for welfare payments because we don't make very many. Most of our current caseload is just for cases where there is no responsible adult in the immediate family, and the child is being cared for by some distant relative, and the child is getting the payment then as part of their basic support. The other uses of this TANF money, the Nurse Family Partnership gets a piece of it. The schools, in terms of the a number of the preschool programs are funded through TANF funds, and there are a number of other projects in, I think, Real Family Services or Workforce Services that are designed to take people who might otherwise be on welfare and get them into the workforce and really have had a lot of success at getting people employed. It's one of the reasons our caseload has fallen so much. So there is considerable that we are doing that we would probably try to replace with general fund if we lost the federal funds. It's been amazing we have not lost the federal funds in Washington, because all the states have had a great deal of success in reducing their welfare caseload. We're the best. We're unusual that way. But all the states have had a lot of success, and the feds are funding a broad range of social programs with relatively few strings. There are some. You can't use it for a strictly medical program. Mr. Chairman, I also have a question on the bill, and that is, it's defined reasonable cost, and as I read it, it applies to both the health care coverage and the cash medical support at no more than 5% of income. And to medical costs, the insurance and medical costs for a child is fairly likely to exceed the income of a fair proportion of our population. What happens in those circumstances? I'm reading the bill. I'm simply not clear what that happens under those circumstances.
Senator Ross.
Thank you. Thank you for the good question, because that was raised also in committee. What would happen is that we haven't violated the mandate of the federal government. With regard to the orders that come out, there is always the contempt power of the court. With regard to, the non-custodial father wasn't making his payments either for the health insurance or wasn't paying for uncovered medical expenses, the court has the authority to come in and, under its contempt powers, for on a motion to show cause, to hold him accountable for his obligation and or the other parent. But in terms of what happens with the feds, and that's why we kept it at the low end, because we have the issue, as I explained on introduction, there's not a lot of insurers in Wyoming. And so, you can buy a policy probably through the Blue Company for a child. The last I had heard, those child-only policies are running about $100 a month or something like that. We wanted to make sure, because there's not a lot of insurers, that you run into these problems where they may not have it. And then what do? We don't want to set ourselves up for a failure. That's why we went on the low end. We wouldn't be if we wouldn't be in violation of the federal government. But there still could be consequences by the very court order itself.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I understand the court has the power to enforce its orders through contempt proceedings. That wasn't the question I had, really. The question I had is, it appears to me that this limits the amount of child support for medical cases to the 5% of income. And what happens if that is insufficient? Because you'll have, if you get the child-only policies, you'll have deductibles and co-payments as well to meet. What happens as a practical matter when there's more need for money than is available within that 5% limit? That's what I'm confused about and can't understand how the bill works in that respect.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I had some of those questions as we worked this bill to the interim and today. What happens in that is the reasonable cost is that you have to provide that. If you can't provide that, then it falls back under the cash medical support obligations. So ultimately, if you can't afford the insurance, you're still not relieved of the obligation to provide cash medical support for your children. So,
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I'm still not understanding it, and I apologize for being slow on this, but it appears when you look on page 3, lines 17 through 21, that the 5% limit appears to apply to the cash medical support as well. So it's the insurance costs plus the cash medical support. And what I'm asking is, what happens when the demand for funds exceeds that 5%?
Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm trying to understand the question. Paragraph, line 17 through 21, reasonable cost means a cost to provide the health care coverage or to provide cash medical support at no more than 5%. So the order would have the order to provide health insurance. If the health insurance is greater than 5% of the individual's gross income, we're not in violation of the feds, the non-dollars, but they're still under an order to provide health insurance, which is required under the law now and is still continued to be required. So if there is not enough money, what we're concerned about in this bill is meeting the federal mandate of what constitutes a reasonable cost for health insurance and a reasonable or reasonable cash medical support. What may happen on the ground in the court case, it may be a whole different ballgame. This bill is more to comply with the federal mandate, and I don't know that I can explain it any. Maybe I'm getting sidetracked, but I don't think that. I think that there are situations. I think that the good senator raised it. The cost of health insurance is going up. And in many circumstances, that health insurance is maybe more than 5%. What happens then? We're not out of compliance if he doesn't buy the policy as far as the feds are concerned, so long as they continue to provide cash medical support, which is paying for those medical expenses, and it may be out of pocket. I hope I've answered the question.
Senator Perkins.
Mr. Chairman, one thing, if we take a step back a little bit, this is just fixing one part. Ultimately, you still have all the child support orders. You still have where they go through, and it looks like a tax table, and if they look at the income of the parents and it makes so much, you still have all that support that comes over. What this is a requirement from the federal government that we recognize some portion of the support that is involved in the overall support that's provided, not just for medical support, but all the support that's provided for a child. And so what we're trying to do is look at that and including in that and taking into consideration the overall support that a child gets. The federal government has required that we look at and include in that a consideration of medical support or medical insurance as a part of that overall component. And so in doing that, we still have the overall guideline for support, and then this is basically in addition to or supplemental to the other types of support. So when you look at those numbers, the overall support obligation that a parent has based on their income is fairly substantial. As in visiting with the department, not necessarily today, but in earlier testimony that we had, they went back and they looked at the median income levels and what those things were, and the recommendation that they came back with, having taken into consideration, was about 5%. Now, my recollection, for some reason this is sticking in my mind, we might have to go back and check this for you, but my recollection was when they came back and did that, the overall number they were looking at for the average person would be about $180 for medical, $180, $200 for medical insurance for a child. And that's kind of the number that number comes out at. Obviously, if you make more, that number goes up. If you make less, that goes down. But it doesn't. You still have the overall support that is, I think it starts out at maybe 25, I can't remember. And it starts out at something like 25% of the income of the parents actually gets contributed towards the support. And then there's this other, that's the overall support, and there's this medical support components that is supplemental to that, if I understand it right.
Senator Scott.
Chairman, I still don't understand, and I'll catch him afterwards and see if I can get it sorted out.
Thank you, Senator. Question has been called for on the bill. All those in favor of our Vice President's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that to do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 8, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 8 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Chairman, I move that the Committee of the Whole rise and report.
You've heard the motion. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
The reading clerk, please read the committee of the whole report.
Mr. President, your committee of the whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, begs leave to report as follows. Senate file 28, do pass amended. Senate file 43, do pass amended. Senate file 47, do pass amended. Senate file 24, do pass. And Senate file 8, do pass. Senator Landon, chairman.
Senator Landon.
Mr. President, I move for the adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
You've heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion adopted. Messages from the House.
February the 12th, 2010, from the House of Representatives, message number 101, third reading passed. Mr. President, the bill listed below passed the House on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 4, Criminal Procedure Time Limits for Competency Evaluation, ayes 58, excuse 2. House Bill 7, Education Code Revisions, ayes 58, excuse 2. House Bill 48, School Finance Audits Amendments, ayes 58, excuse 2. House Bill 55, Elementary Foreign Language Instruction, ayes 49, noes 9, excuse 2. February the 12th, 2010, from the House of Representatives, message number 103, third reading passed amended. Mr. President, the bills listed below pass the House on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. House Bill 10, Electrical Safety Low Voltage Licensing, ayes 58, excuse 2. House Bill 25, Child Care Development Fund, ayes 52, noes 2, excuse 2. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Reports from standing committees.
February the 12th, 2010, Mr. President, your committee number one judiciary, to whom was referred Senate File 9, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Burns, S. Myers, Perkins, Ross, and Sessions, Senator Ross, chairman. February the 12th, 2010, Mr. President, your committee number four, Education, to whom was referred Senate File 39, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Cole, Jennings, Massey, Sessions, Von Flader, and Senator Cole, chairman. February the 12th, 2010, Mr. President, your committee number four, Education, to whom was referred Senate File 51, reports back with the recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Cole, Jennings, Massey, Sessions, Von Flader, and Senator Cole, chairman. February the 12th, 2010, Mr. President, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom was referred Senate File 61, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Hastert, Honeycutt, Landon, Schiffer, and Scott, Senator Scott, chairman. February the 12th, 2010, Mr. President, your committee number 5, Agricultural, State, and Public Lands and Water Resources, to whom was referred Senate File 63, reports back with the recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Bebout, Elliott, Geis, Jennings, and Johnson, Senator Geis, chairman.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, Senate File 61, Health Insurance Reform 2, that was just read in, has an appropriation in it. I ask it be re-referred to the Appropriations Committee.
Senate File 61 will be re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, without objections. Senator Cole.
Mr. President, Senate File 39 was just read in on post-secondary education. Does have an appropriations. Request that it be re-referred to Committee Number 2.
Senate File 39 will be re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, without objections. Senator Doc Statter, did you have any? No, okay. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move that the Senate be adjourned until 10 a.m. Monday morning.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, will meet at 8 a.m. Monday morning in the normal committee room to consider the following bills. Senate File 32, Wyoming Investment in Nursing. Senate File 50, Hospital Privileges. Senate File 15, Title 25 Revisions. And Senate File 59, Workers' Comp Firefighters, in that order.
Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. President, Monday morning, February 15th at 8 a.m. in S1 to consider the following bills: continuation of our work on Senate File 25 liens and Senate File 26 eligibility concealed weapons permit. And for the body's edification, on Monday, the good senator from the Mother County will be in the chair for Committee of the Whole, so I'm asking everybody to treat him fairly.
Senator Doc Statter.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your Committee Number 8, Transportation, will be meeting 10 minutes after adjournment on Monday, February 15th, to discuss the following bills: Senate File 64, Safety Belt Violations 2, Senate File 56, Fuel Tax Bonds, Senate File 62, Veterans Burial, and Senate File 71, Disposal of Remains of Military Personnel. Thank you, Mr. President.
Mr. Majority. Oh, Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, your Committee Number 2, Appropriations, will meet at 1:30 in S13 to discuss Senate File 7, Rangeline Health, Senate File 13, Economic Analysis, Senate File 22, State Active Duty Medical Expense Reimbursement, Senate File 42, School Finance, Student Enrichment. Your Committee Number 2 also will meet on Monday at 8 o'clock in the morning in S13 to start a look at the budget. So,
Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your Committee Number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, will meet at 12:35 in S18 to take up Senate File 31, Federal Natural Resources Policy Account, Senate File 66, Industrial Siting Amendments, and Senate File 52, Reduced Cigarette Ignition Propensity.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. Just quickly, first of all, members of the body, I want to compliment you on an excellent start the first week. I think we've demonstrated to ourselves how much work you can put out. I also want to really recognize your civility and your courtesy to one another. That makes things work much better, and we all appreciate that. You are focused, I think, on the issues that are brought before us. You've been prepared. I appreciate that. But at times, probably better than I. And debate, I think, has been some of the best debate I've heard since I've been down here. Your attention to quality and to the issues, I think, is just outstanding. I want to say to our two newest members, your comments are right on. We appreciate the quality of your comments and the quality of your presentation. You can no longer claim the rookie label. You're in it. So you're all fair game now. You have a target on your back just like the rest of us. Monday looks to be a kind of a Goldilocks day, not too much, not too little, so I think we're going to be okay there. I would say, especially to staff, thank you. You're the people that make us look good. There are times when we kind of misjudge the clock and things like that. We apologize for that, but we're getting better at it. And I'll say to all of you, have a very, very happy and travel safely.
Senator Larson. Mr. President, could I have the privilege of the floor for a moment?
You may.
Just want to remind everybody that on Saturday night, there's going to be a little event, a roast and toast for our good president up there, and would urge any of you who are around to please come and hear some of both the good and the bad about our good president. So.
You have heard the motion that the Senate shall stand adjourned until 10 a.m. Monday morning. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate is adjourned till Monday.